Chapter 72. Better than any play he ever saw, by Jove. And the way in which he jockeyed Joe's, and which he described with infinite fun, carried up his delight to a pitch of quite insane enthusiasm. He believed in his wife as much as the French soldiers in Napoleon. Her success in Paris was remarkable. All the French ladies voted her charming. She spoke their language admirably. She adopted at once their grace, their liveliness, their manner. Her husband was stupid, certainly all English are stupid, and, besides, a dull husband at Paris is always a point in a lady's favor. He was the heir of the rich and spirituelle Miss Crawley, whose house had been open to so many of the French noblesse during the emigration. They received the colonel's wife in their own hotels. "I," wrote a great lady to Miss Crawley, who had bought her lace and trinkets at the Duchess's own price, and given her many a dinner during the pinching times after the Revolution, "I does not our dear Miss come to her nephew and niece, and her attached friends in Paris? All the world raffles of the charming mistress and her espiègle beauty. Yes, we see in her the grace, the charm, the wit of our dear friend Miss Crawley. The king took notice of her yesterday at the Tuileries, and we are all jealous of the attention which Monsieur pays her. If you could have seen the spite of a certain stupid military barristers, whose eagle beak and toque and feathers may be seen peering over the heads of all assemblies, when Madame, the Duchess of Angoulême, the august daughter and companion of kings, desired especially to be presented to Mrs. Crawley, as your dear daughter and protege, and thanked her in the name of France, for all your benevolence towards our unfortunates during their exile. She is of all the societies, of all the balls, yes, of the dances, no, and yet how interesting and pretty this fair creature looks surrounded by the homage of the men, and so soon to be a mother. To hear her speak of you, her protectress, her mother, would bring tears to the eyes of ogres. How she loves you! How we all love our admirable, our respectable Miss Crawley! It is to be feared that this letter of the Parisian great lady did not by any means advance Mrs. Becky's interest with her admirable, her respectable, relative. On the contrary, the fury of the old spinster was beyond bounds when she found what was Rebecca's situation, and how audaciously he had made use of Miss Crawley's name to get an entree into Parisian society. Too much shaken in mind and body to compose a letter in the French language in reply to that of her correspondent, she dictated to Briggs a furious answer in her own native tongue, repudiating Mrs. Rawdon Crawley altogether, and warning the public to beware of her as a most artful and dangerous person. But as Madame the Duchess of Ten had only been 20 years in England, she did not understand a single word of the language, and contented herself by informing Mrs. Rawdon Crawley at their next meeting that he had received a charming letter from that Chermise, and that it was full of benevolent things for Mrs. Crawley, who began seriously to have hopes that the spinster would relent. Meanwhile, she was the gayest and most admired of English women, and at a little European congress on her reception night, Prussians and Cossacks, Spanish and English, all the world was at Paris during this famous winter. To have seen the stars and cordons in Rebecca's humble saloon would have made all Baker Street pale with envy. Famous warriors rode by her carriage in the Bois, or crowded her modest little box at the opera. Rawdon was in the highest spirits. There were no duns in Paris as yet. There were parties every day at Verrier's or Beauvilliers. Play was plentiful and his luck good. Tufto perhaps was sulky. Mrs. Tufto had come over to Paris at her own invitation, and besides this contretemps, there were a score of generals now round Becky's chair, and she might take her choice of a dozen bouquets when she went to the play. Lady Barristers and the chiefs of the English society, stupid and irreproachable females, writhed with anguish at the success of the little upstart Becky, whose poisoned jokes quivered and rankled in their chaste breasts. But she had all the men on her side. She fought the women with indomitable courage, and they could not talk scandal in any tongue but their own. So in fates, pleasures, and prosperity. The winter of 1815-16 passed away with Mrs. Rawdon Crawley, who accommodated herself to polite life, as if her ancestors had been people of fashion for centuries past, and who from her wit, talent, and energy, indeed merited a place of honor in Vanity Fair. In the early spring of 1816, Galignani's journal contained the following announcement in an interesting corner of the paper. "On the 26th of March, the lady of Lieutenant Colonel Crawley, of the lifeguards Green of A Son and Heir." This event was copied into the London papers, out of which Miss Briggs read the statement to Miss Crawley, at breakfast, at Brighton. The intelligence, expected as it might have been, caused a crisis in the affairs of the Crawley family. The spinster's rage rose to its height, and sending instantly for Pitt, her nephew, and for the Lady Southdown, from Brunswick Square, she requested an immediate celebration of the marriage which had been so long pending between the two families. And she announced that it was her intention to allow the young couple £1,000 a year during her lifetime, at the expiration of which the bulk of her property would be settled upon her nephew and her dear niece, Lady Jane Crawley. Waxy came down to ratify the deeds. Lord Southdown gave away his sister. She was married by a bishop, and not by the Rev. Bartholomew Irons, to the disappointment of the irregular prelate. When they were married, Pitt would have liked to take a hymeneal tour with his bride, as became people of their condition. But the affection of the old lady towards Lady Jane had grown so strong that she fairly owned she could not part with her favorite. Pitt and his wife came therefore, and lived with Miss Crawley. And, greatly to the annoyance of poor Pitt, who conceived himself a most injured character being subject to the humors of his aunt on one side, and of his mother-in-law on the other, Lady Southdown, from her neighboring house, reigned over the whole family. Pitt, Lady Jane, Miss Crawley, Briggs, Bowles, Firkin, and all. She pitilessly dosed them with her tracts and her medicine. She dismissed Creamer, she installed Rogers, and soon stripped Miss Crawley of even the semblance of authority. The poor soul grew so timid that she actually left off bullying Briggs anymore, and clung to her niece, more fond and terrified every day. Peace to thee, kind and selfish, vain and generous old heathen. We shall see thee no more. Let us hope that Lady Jane supported her kindly, and led her with gentle hand out of the busy struggle of Vanity Fair. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.